Set up for Skype.
What, do you need to use Skype?
No. I changed the window because the PowerPoint stuff's up with sharing screen with Skype. It breaks off. And
all right, our next presentation is Peter Withers from the MPI, talking about new developments in Arbor.
Hi. So I guess most of you are reasonably familiar with Arbor. It's essentially a metadata editor. So what it does is it helps you to create metadata files in IMD format, and we've recently added SIMD format into the mix. So there's now a few formats you can use within Arbor. The things that I'll be talking about are what it does, target workflows, metadata format, user interface workflows, and I'll let you read the rest rather than reading them all out. The one that's probably more interesting is the future things, which is Marble and the YAS prototype, which is a web-based search. Marble is a cut-down, simplified user interface based on the fact that the original version of Arbor was designed primarily for the Dobus community, had a very specific workflow, and Marble is trying to remove that workflow to unmandate that workflow, to make it more flexible. Just making sure I'm in sync with what's on there. Yeah. Okay, that's next. Good. Okay. So the primary thing is making metadata for the data, because if you don't have metadata, as I think we all probably know, without the metadata, you can't find the data. And then when you've moved on, you've moved to another project, you can't remember what it was. Other people certainly can't remember what it was. So the metadata is crucial in terms of turning a graveyard into an archive. Otherwise, you end up with lost data. That's right. So I'm going to turn around and look at the screen because it's a little bit easier. Many of the features of Arbor are about curating the actual metadata itself. The earlier tools before Arbor had a very tabular modal dialog-based method of working where you had to burrow down into the interface to find this particular bit so you can edit that little piece. Whereas the process with Arbor was to put things into a table and give you all your metadata files at once, and then you can compare them all, you can update your email address in all the different metadata files at once. Because there was a lot of people doing curation. And also being able to find the metadata files through the search functions and then launching the respective applications such as ENAM and so forth. So this is all very much designed for the Dobus community. And they had a very specific workflow using having training to train people how to work with Llamas and collecting the metadata and then processing it. But outside that community, that's not necessarily the case. And some of the people we've been working with, particularly with the Clarin community, they don't have that same workflow. They often have a very specific set of metadata, a very small set of metadata, and they want a very different approach. Another user group is people who have very little computer skills, and so training the concepts of adding sessions and nodes, which I'll come onto in a moment, is quite a big step. And so I'll talk about this more in detail later, where we're trying to reduce the learning curve to start using the application. So, metadata formats. As I've briefly mentioned, Clarin and IMD, they're the two metadata formats that are supported in Arbor. I just wonder, how many people are aware of what IMD is? And how many people know about Clarin? Okay, so it's worth going into a little bit of detail. I won't give too much detail, but the short story is that IMD has been around for a very long time. It was designed specifically for linguistics. It has fields for everything, which is one of its good points. One of its bad points, it has fields for everything. And as a result, many people don't know what a field's for. There's name and there's title. Which do you use? I know because I've seen inside the code, and I know what linguists generally tend to do at the MPI, but it's not necessarily clear what name and title actually means. And to be honest, I actually really don't know what they originally meant in the first place. So that causes certain problems. And so Clarin was created as a larger project to make it easier to go between. So if you have your project and you care about GIS data and you care about the name of the informant and you care about the colour of the grass when you're collecting the data, that might be important to you. So you make a Clarin profile with those specific fields in it. You then tie them into the data category registry, which says this field, whatever it's called, we don't care what language it's in, this field always refers to grass colour. And this always refers to name of informant. So the component registry allows you to make these connections, and then someone else can have their own metadata, which has name of informant, but the colour of the sky at the time of recording. Those two metadata sets are very different, but they're interoperable in the future because you can always say name of informant, this is the thing we're looking for, you can do an aggregated search based on that correlation. And it doesn't matter what field name you've used, you could use any language, it doesn't actually matter. The classic example is person, human, or informant. Like, they're basically the same thing. There's different semantic differences in certain contexts, but for someone in 10 years' time, they probably don't care about those differences. So that's what that does. So going back to Arvel, so the user interface for the main application is basically you have a remote corpus, which is very much about viewing stuff within the archive. This has now been extended to support Clarin archives. But any supported archive, you can paste in the URL and it will then support that view. You can then burrow down and look at the corpus structure and then find the resource files and then launch the resource files if you have access to those files. Then you have the local corpus, which is cached locally on your machine. So no one else but someone on your machine can see that, and that's where you'd mainly be working. Then you have the local files, which would be your resource files. So when you have an audio file, a video file, that would be your data files, which you would then add metadata to. Then you have favourites, which is snippets, frequently used bits of metadata, such as if you have two or three informants, you might have your actors, and you would just drag them onto new session files. And similarly with projects or an entire session file. For instance, a lot of people have a single session file for all of their data. They do this once. They don't want to do it again. And so they can put the entire session file into the favourites. They can then make multiple instances of that and then drag the data files onto each one, however they want to organise that. Then there's a preview table, which is just when you click things on the left-hand side, be it the remote corpus or the local corpus or the working directories, that'll show you the detail at the first level, such as the name, the title, the description, and so forth. So it's a preview of the metadata. And then the working area, which has tables in different forms. So whether there's two different sorts of table, I'll describe that in a moment. So the workflow, and this is where I'm talking about, where it's focusing primarily on the Dobis community. For the Dobis community, there was a strong need to have offline use. And I think that still remains, because there will always be people who want to collect their data, they have no internet access, and they want to put their metadata in while they're there because they have the information then. And also not be required to fill in all the metadata because they might not know. They might not know the age of the informant. They might know that 10 years later. So that flexibility is something that will always be there, certainly while I'm around. So essentially, in those three areas you see there that arrows are pointing to, that's where you're working, the local corpus, the tables, and the preview. All those areas are basically editable. You can import metadata from the remote corpus, say from the archive. So if you're, say, working in a particular group that has an existing corpus, you could import that metadata, take it with you. You probably can't get the data because that's probably restricted access. And this application doesn't have all that much ability to log into Shibboleth, for instance, which is the way that our archive handles permissions. So you probably only take the metadata. You probably don't want to take the video files anyway. That can also be then used to create favourites. So for instance, if you have an existing corpus for your group, you might say take the project information and other common information and put that into your favourites to speed up that process. And then creating instances from those favourites and a cycle of editing and modifying you can do there. So you can edit those favourites in situ. And then creating adding resource files simply by dragging them from the files tree into the actual metadata. You can also use this as a way of backing up your data. So if you have a USB disk and you've created a corpus with all your resource files, you can then export from ARBL onto a USB disk and it'll take your metadata and your resource files in one bundle. How much of this is too much repetition for people who already know the application? Okay, good. And then exporting is the process you would do when you've completed your corpus with metadata to the point where you want to upload it into the archive or into a workspace. You would then export it, you would then use Llamas to upload it into your workspace, and there you may leave it there for a while and then move it into the archive later or move it in straight away. And then you would later be able to still do the curation process of editing things. It's usually easier to do the editing in ARBL because it has a richer set of functionality, whereas Llamas has, you can edit the name of the title and a few other things, but it's maybe not the easiest application to use. But once it's on the server, you would have to export it and re-import it to get it to ARBL. And that's something that is probably going to change, we hope, with things changes with Clarin. So the metadata tables that I mentioned. So there's a number of ways of using the tables. So you have the tree, which allows you to burrow down. So the corpuses are a bit like, corpus nodes are a bit like a directory structure. 10 minutes? I'm going to speed up. So we essentially have, you can burrow down, and then you have the tables where you can have multiple metadata files in one table. And I am, okay, I'm going to go really fast. If there's something which is incorrect or incomplete, it will just highlight it in red. It will not stop you from using that, entering that data. You might not know the full information, so there's no point stopping you from doing it, but it does show you that there's a problem. And when you export, it can tell you that there's a problem. And when you upload to Llamas, anything that's red will probably stop you from doing it, so you probably can't upload that to Llamas, and that's the appropriate time. But at this point, it just tells you. Nicely gives you a warning. Then within the table, so this is a table where you have multiple metadata nodes as rows, and this is one where it's one single metadata file with all the rows vertically. Then there's also the long field view. Sometimes people like to write a book inside the description, and this is a fairly minimal example. And that allows you to see the entire field. And also you can start at the top of the table and work your way down by using the previous and next button. So you can actually go through the entire session without having to leave that field, without leaving that editor. Okay. Another nice feature is to control vocabularies. MD and SIMD have different ways of doing it, but from your point of view, you don't need to worry about that. All you need to know is that if there's a controlled vocabulary, it'll give you a list. Sometimes they're closed, where you can't add new text. Sometimes open, where you can add new text. Favourites, I'll do that quite quickly because I pretty much described that anyway. And then adding resources, as I described, you're dragging the resources onto the session or onto the metadata file to then add that as a resource. Metadata is usually added in subsections, so you might have, in IMD you might have a session file in which you'd have a project, in which you'd have an actor, you might have three actors, you might have four actors, you might have one actor or none. And then you might have any number of resource nodes, which would be written resources or media resources. And so these, so this is an example of adding a country. You then see a country which has a single field, and then you're adding that single field into that node. The other thing that's possible is adding a single field. So in MD, that will be a description. You can have as many descriptions as you like. One in Spanish, one in English, one in French. It's up to you what you do with that. And when you add the field, it highlights. Okay, so searching. So ARBL has quite nice search. It does have limitations in that if you search more than 1,000 metadata files, I should explain. So ARBL does not have a database. It's designed to be really robust. You can take it in the field, and if something goes wrong, you can fix it. If it's using a database, you might or might not be able to fix it when you get back. So it has limitations because of that, and this is the primary limitation in that you can search to a certain degree, but more than 1,000 nodes, Java is probably going to run out of memory because it can't get it all in memory. Things I'll mention very quickly later on is a solution to that, and very similar to this. So basically you can enter in multiple different parameters and then it will find the relevant metadata files. And from that you can then get to the data files. Okay, I won't go into all the details of what the application does, but these are some of them, which is finding and replacing text. Most common thing is my email address is changing my entire corpus, I'd like to update those, is where this tends to be used. And also highlighting fields, so you can select any number of fields and highlight them in different colours. So you can actually make it easier to spot certain things. And if you want to use the application, this is the download page on our website. There's also the manual and installers for Debian, Windows. Debian is also Ubuntu, Windows, Mac, and WebStart. WebStart's having a bit of trouble lately. Apple have decided to break it in a few ways. So if you're using Mac, WebStart may or may not work well. If you want to know more, ask me afterwards. Future. So Marbl, which I alluded to, which is still a desktop application, but a highly simplified user interface, and far less specific workflow, so a broader target audience. Yas, which is an online search, it uses a lot of ARBL, but it's completely online and has no database. It has a database, so it has no limitations that ARBL has. And it is potentially a mobile application. So in more detail. So it's simplified in the sense that we primarily are aiming to have... Oh, I went too fast. Okay. Okay, so it has a very simplified interface in that what I'm planning to do is to keep the existing interface of ARBL basically the same. I do not intend to change that. Some paradigms might change. For instance, the need for the local corpus. And I'll be interested to know if people were really upset if that local corpus was gone. And by that I mean the hidden cache where all your metadata goes and you can't see it. That's what I mean. And I think it's important to get rid of that. I think it's a paradigm that came in by the initial requirements. I think it was slightly fraught when it came in, and there are better ways of doing it now, primarily because I'm using an XML database in Yas, which I'll explain in a moment. So minimal workflow requirements. So you open your file browser in your operating system, and then you'd right-click the data file and go create metadata. The other thing would be a widget where you would say search, and it would then know where all your metadata and all your files are on your operating system, and you'd then be able to search them and then show you your file browser of your operating system with your files in it. So much closer integration. And I shouldn't understate, that makes my job a lot harder because each installer for every operating system becomes magnitudinally more complex. However, I think it makes the usability far greater. It makes it much easier to use. So this means that the local cache, the hidden metadata you can't see, is no longer relevant because you have the media files with the metadata files next to each other. So if you want to move them, you can just move them with the metadata. If you move your media file away from your metadata, you're going to have a problem. So there needs to be some sort of mediation there. The application will be able to track when things are missing and ask you to show the application where it's been moved to. So any directory can be used. So for instance, you might be able to say, well, this directory is going to be my project and everything in this will be scanned by the application and it will index it all. and, as I mentioned, the metadata next to the data file. Then the search widget, which means you can immediately utilize, similar in ARBL. In ARBL, you can immediately utilize your metadata to find things and organize things. But I think this gives a much more immediate access to that. You don't have to launch the application and select a node and then search. You will just be able to open the widget, type in some text and search, and then find some results. Primarily, the idea is that it's gathering the metadata from wherever you've told the application the metadata and the data is going to be. That's primarily what that widget does. Yes. I'm not cynical at all. I've actually, this is not necessarily the final name, I should point out, but it's yet another archive search. So this is the interface currently. It's in development. It is available online, but it is a prototype and it is not very fast because this server has very minimal resources. However, it's there and it's running. You'd notice that this is very similar to the search interface in ARBL. It has a similar function, similar needs, similar requirements. It has nicer features in the sense that we have... I've got a mouse going. No, anyway. So we have type ahead here. So when you're typing in, it's searching the database and saying, well, I've typed in Dutch or DUT, and here are some fields which we know are in the database. And it will do that even more nicely if you specified, here I specify the date and here I specify the name. So these are name fields which contain the word Dutch. And date fields, it will give you a list of dates. Let's not go to screensaver. Oh, horrible. Hooray, good. So you can have as many search fields or as few as you like. You probably only normally use one, and I think most people tend to just use one field. And I think there's actually a call to have just a single text box to do a searching. It doesn't necessarily need to be this complex. So essentially what it is a web-based search. It has the tree and the search very similar to ARBL, and in fact it is actually using the ARBL code to do all of this on the server side. And on the client side, it's using Google Web Toolkit, which means it's all in JavaScript, which has other advantages which we'll come to. And they're the basic things it has. It will also have branch-based search, where you select a branch and search within that branch. More details. So it has an XML database like Kinoth. And everything's rendered in HTML5, which means it will work on your tablet. And it can also potentially be compiled into a mobile application. This is not a mobile application. This is just my tablet viewing the web page. And so that's what it would basically could look like if it was a mobile application. But we're not yet there yet. That's not a promise. That's just like, this is what we probably can do. And also the thing of having cloud-based storage type thing using workspaces. Again, that's really premature to mention, but it's one of the possible future things. And I think it's, to be honest, I think it's what we need to do. And more immediate things. So ARBL has been translated into, ARBL and Kinoth have both been translated to, English obviously, Spanish, Italian and German, because we have student assistants who know those languages, which I go into a bit here in more detail. I'll put it in there, so yeah. So essentially, because those student assistants know those languages, that they can translate the interface as it is. Next week, we'll have different student assistants, they'll have different languages, and we won't be able to maintain the current languages. So this is a paradox that we need to solve, and my way of solving this is to use Launchpad, which is an Ubuntu project, or Canonical project, who produce Ubuntu. And basically, they have a translation tool, and that everything you translate in the application goes into BSD. So BSD license, so it means that anyone can use that, it has no copyright on it whatsoever. And what that means is that when we have a new field or new menu item in our application, this tool will say, someone else had this menu item and they called it this, would you like to use that translation? It's really nice. So that means that we can maintain the translations far more easily. And most crucially, we can say, well, if someone wants their particular language, we don't have any student assistance, we don't have the resources, we can say, here you go, you can log in, you can get a student assistant, or you can do it yourself, or whatever, and you can maintain it. If, say, for instance, Spanish, which we currently have, we no longer have a Spanish translator, and we make a modification, we can't release that translation because it's not complete. So then we would need a volunteer to, say, put in one field. So this tool will allow us to do that community-based translation, which I think really kicks us forward. Speaking of which. And so in conclusion, it's initially designed on the Dovis community, and I'm trying to make it to a much broader community. And not mandating any particular order of processing. And showing warnings. And as always, my intention is to try and help people to create and use and value their match data at an earlier stage. That's really the philosophy behind the application. So, thanks for listening. No, because it could be. You could design your data in that way. But I'm not sure that I'd recommend it. What you would do is you would do a XQuery update, which would be find fields with this value and change the value. This is using BaseX, which is, from a programmer's point of view, quite nice. It just plugs in. Just put in your Maven dependencies and it will just run. Yas is using it over a REST interface, so we have a REST database server, and in Knoth, it's actually using the Java binding, so whenever you take Knoth, it has a database inside it. And both those two things work really nicely. There are advantages to and from both. But we can probably go into more detail later, because I'm not sure the others want to know those sort of gritty details. With Yas, my current target is 500,000 metadata files. Currently, I've got examples online which have about 40,000. It's only that limit because that's what I got to crawl before I left the other day. It does squeak a little bit once it gets up to the 100,000 mark, and we'll be tweaking it and optimising it so we get up. So I am going to get to 500,000 metadata files and it is going to work well. I'm not sure what I need to do to make it work well. I do think BaseX will do it. So. And for what you were talking about, that's possibly a very good option. You have XQuery, you have transforms, you have REST interface, you have a REST queue, and so forth. Yeah. Anyway.
Oh, could you just talk a bit more about the audience that Marvin was designed for?
One of the things that when Paul Trulsbeck came back from Africa, I think, a lot of the users were had never used a computer before, and so they were learning the paradigms. So using a file browser was a new experience. Word, being familiar with Word, is just it's not an option. It just that familiarity is not there in that particular group. And there's no reason why we can't, there's challenges, but there's no reason why we can't target an audience like that. Whether we actually achieve that, I'm not sure, but we can certainly get partway there. Does that really answer your question?
Yeah, so what would be the downside?
Downside. I'll describe another user. There is another user who has a huge corpus, and she has refused to use the local corpus process. She has all the metadata files and data files next to each other in a giant directory tree. And in her case, is the opposite end of the spectrum, but the same purpose. So for her case, she wants to say, "Here's my project index. Thank you very much." The reason the cache is there is that. We didn't want people to move the metadata files around because their links to the data files would get broken. But I find that causes problems, and I think it causes more problems than it solves. The disadvantage of not having it is that you would have a metadata file next to or near your data file, and if you move your data file without your metadata file, you're going to break the system. And the reason why we can do that now is that whether it's just, and I don't think it will be just, but the application will have the database for Yas and Knoth type database behind it, and so it can find things, whereas Arbel, as it's currently designed, to be so robust. It can't say, well, I know that there's a directory full of files and I have an index of this. It doesn't. What it does is it has individual files, like HTML files, following links. And so it needs to say, here's the first file, burrow down through those files. It's a simpler way of doing it. It uses less resources in some ways. And it's very robust. But I'm not sure that we need to maintain that style of doing it. And I should say that when I talk about using the XML database on top of this, those XML files and the history type thing would remain. So it would still have that robustness. And if someone did break something, the application would say, well, look, I can't find a data file. You're going to have to show me where it is. And so there's going to be have to be some kind of process to maintain the integrity of the data there.
Okay, I think we can have more discussion of this later on.